Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Champions of the Force, Volume 3 of the Jedi Academy Trilogy by Kevin J. Anderson. The Sun Crusher plunged into the Karita system like an assassin's knife into an unsuspecting heart. Old beyond his years, Kip Duran sat hunched over the controls, intent on his new target. With the might of the superweapon, as well as powerful techniques his spectral mentor Exar Kun had taught him, Kip would extinguish all threats against the New Republic. Only days before, he had annihilated Admiral Dalla and her two star destroyers in the Cauldron Nebula. On the fringes of the explosion, he had dropped off one of the Sun Crusher's coffin-sized message pods so that the galaxy would know who was responsible for the victory. His next target would be the Imperial Military Training Center on Karita. The military planet was a largish world with high gravity to toughen the muscles of potential stormtroopers. Its untamed land masses provided an appropriate range of training environments: arctic wastelands, rainforests, mountain crags, and desert hardpan. Karita seemed the opposite of Kip's peaceful homeworld of Dire, where he and his family had lived in raft colonies on the calm, terraformed lakes. But that peace had been shattered years ago when Kip's parents had chosen to protest the destruction of Alderaan. Stormtroopers had crushed the colony, whisking Kip and his parents to the spice mines of Kessel, while conscripting his brother Zeth for the Stormtrooper Training Center. Now, as he orbited the military planet, Kip's face bore the tight, hardened look of a person who has been through the raging fire of his own conscience. Shadows rimmed his eyes. He did not expect to find his brother still alive after so many years, but he intended to learn the truth. And if Zeth was not there, Kip had enough power to destroy the whole Karidan solar system. A week ago, he had left Luke Skywalker for dead atop the great temple on Yavin 4. He had stolen design parameters of the Sun Crusher from the mind of its naive creator, Quizux. And he had blown up 5 stars to incinerate Admiral Dalla and her 2 star destroyers. Since that awesome victory, Kip's obsession had gained momentum, and he had set out on a hyperspeed course toward annihilating the Empire. The Karidan Defense Network spotted the Sun Crusher as Kip entered orbit. He decided to transmit his ultimatum before the Imperial forces tried anything stupid. Karidan Military Academy, this is the pilot of the Sun Crusher. Han had once told him a story about a buffoonish ambassador from Karida who had caused a diplomatic incident on Coruscant by tossing his drink in Mon Mothma's face. He searched for the man's name and it came to him. I wish to speak to Ambassador Fergan to discuss the terms of your surrender. I think you're familiar with the capabilities of this weapon. The Imperials were coming through on his comm. Apparently they were indeed familiar with the Sun Crusher.
Intruder, we are transmitting a set of landing coordinates. Follow them precisely or you will be destroyed.
You don't seem to understand what's going on here. Let me talk to Ambassador Fergan now, or your planetary system is going to be the galaxy's newest bright spot.
The hollow panel flickered, and the wide, flat face of Fergan appeared, looking just as Han had described him, with his heavy eyebrows and fat, purplish lips.
Why have you come here, rebel? You are in no position to make demands.
Kip rolled his eyes, losing patience already.
Listen to me, Fergan. I want to find out what happened to my brother, Zeth Duran. He was brought here about 10 years ago. Once you have that information, we'll discuss terms.
On Karita, in the main citadel of the Imperial Military Training Center, Ambassador Fergan looked down at his comm officer, scanning readouts.
Check that boy's words, Lieutenant Doran. I want to know the capabilities of that weapon.
Ambassador, the comm officer replied, we know from our spy network that the rebels had a stolen Imperial weapon called the Sun Crusher, which can supposedly trigger the explosion of a star, and there was a mysterious multiple supernova in the Cauldron Nebula less than a week ago, just as the intruder claims. Fergan felt a thrill of anticipation. Preparations for an assault on the planet Anoth, the secret hiding place of the Jedi baby of Leia Organa Solo, were already underway. If he could get his hands on the Sun Crusher and the Jedi baby, a young, malleable replacement for the Emperor, he would have more power at his disposal than any of the squabbling warlords in the core systems. Karita could perhaps become the center of a blossoming new empire, with himself at its helm as regent.
While the Sun Crusher pilot is distracted and awaiting news of his brother, Fergan said, we shall mount a full-fledged assault to cripple his craft. We can't let such an opportunity escape us.
Kip stared at the Sun Crusher's chronometer, growing angrier with each ticking interval. With a surge of static, the Caridan comm officer's image appeared before him.
To the pilot of the Sun Crusher, we regret that your brother did not survive initial military training. Our exercises are very strenuous. During a mountain survival tour, he and his team were snowed in by a sudden blizzard. He appears to have frozen to death. I have the full details in a file. I can upload it if you like.
Yes, Kip said, his mouth dry. Give me everything. Kip watched the data on the accident scroll across his screens. He thought of Exarchine, the ancient lord of the Sith, who had shown him many things that Master Skywalker refused to teach. The news of Zeth's inevitable death was like severing the remaining threads of Kip's fragile restraint. Nothing could stop him now. Emerging from the thin veil of atmosphere at the limb of the planet, a battle group of 40 TIE fighters roared toward him. Another cluster of 20 came from the opposite horizon in a pincer formation. The ploy of Zeth's files had been meant to keep him preoccupied as the Caridans launched an attack. The TIE fighters came in, firing laser blasts. Kip felt their impacts against the Sun Crusher, but his special quantum-layered armor could withstand even a turbo-laser blast. One of the TIE pilots contacted Kip.
We have you surrounded. You cannot escape.
Sorry, I'm fresh out of white flags. Kip used his sensors to track the lead TIE fighter which had sent the message. He targeted with his defensive lasers and strafed the ship. The TIE ship broke apart in a flower of white and orange flame. The wall of anger rose and strengthened in him. He had already given more warning than the Caridans deserved. Kip had stated his ultimatum, and Fergan had sent out attack ships. Additional fighting was not worth his time. He had a bigger target. Two fast TIE interceptors streaked after him as he pulled out of planetary orbit and set a course for the star at the heart of the system. The only damage they could possibly do to the Sun Crusher would be to take out its tiny laser turrets. Kip paid the pursuing Imperials no heed. He could think of nothing but Zeth. The only way for Kip to cauterize the memory of his brother's death was to purge the entire planet with fire. He activated the firing systems for his resonance torpedoes. The high-energy projectile would be pumped out in an oval-shaped plasma discharge from the toroidal generator at the bottom of the Sun Crusher. As Kip swooped in toward the blazing ball of Karita's sun, flickering prominences reached out of the star's chromosphere. Boiling convection cells lifted hot knots of gas to the surface, where they cooled and sank back into the churning depths. Dark sunspots stood out like blemishes. He sighted on one of the black spots, as if it were a bullseye. Kip primed the resonance torpedo and spared a moment to glance back. His TIE pursuers had split off, unwilling to come so close to the glaring sun. Failsafe warning systems flashed in front of Kip, but he disregarded them. When the control system winked green, he depressed the firing buttons and shot a sizzling blue-green ellipsoid deep into Karita's sun. Stormtroopers ran along the halls in the citadel of the military training center, taking emergency positions, but they didn't quite know what to do. Ambassador Fergan looked shocked.
But how could all of our TIE fighters miss?
They didn't miss, sir, Comm Officer Doran said. The Sun Crusher seems to have impenetrable armor. Kip Duron has launched a projectile into our sun. I think we know what that means, sir. Kip Duron's voice broke over the intercoms.
Karita, I warned you. But you chose to trick me instead. Now accept what you've brought upon yourselves. According to my calculations, it will take 2 hours before the core of your sun reaches a critical configuration. You have that amount of time to evacuate your planet.
Fergan leaned over to flick a switch, toggling to the hangar bay in the lower staging area of the Citadel.
Colonel Ardax, muster your forces immediately. Get them aboard the dreadnought Vendetta. We will launch our Anoth assault team within the hour.
Fergan turned to his comm officer.
Are you certain that the boy's brother is dead?
Doran blinked. I don't know, sir. You told me to delay him, so I sent a fake file. Do you want me to check?
Of course I want you to check. If we can use the brother as a hostage, perhaps we can force that boy to neutralize the effects of this sun-crusher weapon.
Kip watched through the viewport as the surviving TIE fighter swooped back toward Karita. He smiled with satisfaction. It would be good to see the Karitans panicked scramble as they tried to grab everything of value on the planet. He watched the streams of ships launch away from the main training citadel until there were only 27 minutes before the shockwave struck. The holo panel flickered and the image of the comm officer appeared.
Pilot of the Suncrusher, this is Lieutenant Doran. We have located your brother, Zeth.
Kip felt as if someone had thrust a lightsaber through his heart. How can that be? You said he died in training.
Falsified information.
Hot tears sprang to Kip's eyes. He felt overwhelming joy at knowing Zeth was still alive, and anger at having committed the most fundamental mistake of all, believing what the Imperials told him. He doubted he had enough time to rescue his brother, but he had to try. It took 5 minutes to get back to Karita. He orbited around the massive planet in a tight arc, setting course for the Imperial Training Center. Lieutenant Doran appeared again on the holo panel, dragging a white-armored stormtrooper into view.
Kip Duron, please respond.
I'm here. I'm coming to get you, Zeth.
The comm officer turned to the stormtrooper.
2112, remove your helmet.
Hesitantly, as if he had not done so in a long time, the stormtrooper tugged his helmet off and stood blinking in the unfiltered light. The heart-rending image Kip saw reminded him of himself.
Zeth, Kip whispered. I'm coming.
The comm officer waved his hands.
You can't make it in time. You must stop the Suncrusher torpedo.
I can't stop it. Nothing can stop it.
If you don't, we're all going to die.
Then you're going to die. You all deserve it, except for Zeth. I'm going to come for him.
Kip plowed through the high atmosphere of Karita. Heated air purled off the sides of the superweapon as a shock front pushed a shield in front of him. Sonic booms rippled behind him. The planet's surface approached, and Kip soared over a wasteland of rocks and canyons toward the geometric shapes farther out in the desert. The Suncrusher shot like a meteor over a cluster of bunkers and metallic huts. Isolated stormtroopers marched about in drills, unaware that their sun was about to explode. On the chronometer, 5 minutes remained.
Zeth, get ready. I'm coming in.
To rescue us both,
Doran said.
The comm officer was sounding increasingly desperate. Kip felt torn. He wanted to leave this man who had lied to him, who had made him despair and forced him into the decision to destroy Karita. He wanted to let him die. But the man could help him for now.
Get yourselves into an open area. I'm going to be there in less than a minute.
Doran nodded. Zeth finally overcame his own confusion and spoke.
Kip? My brother? Kip? Is that you?
The sun crusher streaked over the jagged minarets and pinnacles of the Karitan Citadel. Out in the courtyard, hundreds of low-ranking refugees scrambled about in tiny flyers, aiming up into the skies. Though with no hyperdrive capability, they could never outrun the fury of the supernova. Kip decelerated abruptly until he hovered over the fortress. Suddenly, the Suncrusher lurched from side to side as automatic perimeter lasers targeted him and fired.
Shut down your defenses, he screamed at the comm officer.
He wasted time targeting and firing at the perimeter lasers. Two of the weapon emplacements blew up in roiling smoke, but the third, a blaster cannon, scored a direct hit against the Suncrusher. The superweapon spun end over end, out of control, until it smashed into one of the tall turret walls. Kip managed to get control again and raised the vehicle up. No time to vent his anger. No time to do anything but get to the tower. Kip watched the chronometer click down from 4 minutes to 3.
Take shelter. I'm going to blast open the roof.
He targeted with one of his weapons and fired, but he received an error message. The laser turret had been damaged by his collision with the tower. Kip swore and spun the ship around so he could target with a different laser. After a short, controlled burst, the roof of the tower melted inward. Kip flicked on his tractor beam to yank the debris away before it could collapse into the lower floors. He brought the sun crusher over the smoking crater. Two people scrambled out from under the desks where they had taken shelter.
2 minutes.
Tip hovered over them. If he lowered his ship, they could reach the ladder to the hatch where they could climb into the shielded sun crusher. As the ship dropped toward them, Lieutenant Doran stood up and battered Zeth on the back of the skull with a broken plasteel shard. Zeth fell to his knees, shaking his head and pulling out his blaster in reflex. The comm officer ran to the sun crusher's ladder, but Tip, furious at seeing what Doran had done, raised the ship out of the man's reach. Scrambling, the comm officer jumped up to reach the rungs of the ladder, but he missed and slapped his hands against the hull instead. The quantum armor was still smoking hot from Kip's fiery plunge through the atmosphere. Doran screamed as it burned his hands. Falling back to the ground, Doran turned just in time to see Zeth fire the blaster at him. The comm officer flew backward, his chest a black hole. He collapsed among the debris. 1 minute. Kip maneuvered the sun crusher back into position, lowered the ladder, but Zeth collapsed to his knees, blood streaming down the back of his head. Kip locked onto his brother's limp form with the tractor beam, yanking him up off the floor and drawing him toward the sun crusher. And then Karita's sun exploded. The shock wave roared through the atmosphere, bringing instant incinerating fire. The entire citadel turned into a storm of flames. The sun crusher tumbled end over end, and Kip flew against the far wall of the cockpit, his face plastered against one of the external view screens. He saw Zeth's body disintegrating into a fading silhouette as the stellar energy ripped across Karida. Kip hauled himself into the pilot seat. In shock, he used his Jedi instincts to punch the sublight engines. The sun crusher blasted out of the atmosphere and entered hyperspace. As star lines formed around him and the supernova made one last grab with hands of flame, Kip let out a long, anguished cry of despair at what he had done. His scream vanished with him into hyperspace. Leia Organa Solo emerged from the Millennium Falcon on Yavin 4, ducking her head as she walked down the landing ramp. She looked toward the towering edifice of the great Masasi Temple. It was a cool morning on the jungle moon, and mist rose from the ground, clinging to the low treetops and brushing against the stone ziggurat like a thin white shroud. A funeral shroud, she thought, for Luke. It had been a week since the trainees at the Jedi Academy had found Luke Skywalker's motionless body atop the temple. They had brought him inside, done their best to care for him, but they did not know what to do. The best New Republic medics had found no physical damage. They agreed that Luke still lived, but he lay in complete stasis. Leia had little hope of doing anything herself, but she could at least be with her brother. The twins came clomping down the Falcon's ramp, seeing who could make the loudest banging noises with their small boots. Han stood between Jason and Jaina, holding their hands.
"Be quiet, you two," he said.
"Are we going to see Uncle Luke?" Jaina asked.
"Yes, but he's sick. He won't be able to talk to you."
"Is he dead?" Jason asked.
"No," Leia answered sharply. Robed figures emerged from the temple, drifting out of the early morning shadows. Leia quickly counted a dozen. In the lead, she recognized the rusty orange face of a Calamarian, Silgal. Leia herself had seen Jedi potential in the fish-like woman and had urged her to join Luke's academy. Silgal had managed to use her proven ambassadorial skills to hold the 12 students together in the terrible days following the fall of their Jedi master. Leia recognized other candidates gliding across the dew-damp ground. Streen, an older man with wild hair tucked haphazardly beneath a Jedi hood. He had been a gas prospector on Bespin, a hermit hiding from the voices he heard in his head. She saw tall Kirana Tee, one of the witches of Dathomir, whom Leia and Han had encountered during their whirlwind courtship. Leia also identified Tian, whose long, silvery hair flowed down the back of her robe. Tian was a student of Jedi history who wanted desperately to be a Jedi herself. Then came hard-bitten Cam Solusar, a once-corrupted Jedi whom Luke had dragged back to the light side, and Dorsk 81, a streamlined, slick-skinned alien who had been cloned generation after generation because his society believed they had already developed the perfect civilization, but Dorsk 81 had been different. Leia didn't recognize the other Jedi candidates, but she knew Luke had been diligent in his Jedi search. Silgal raised a flippered hand.
"We are glad you could come, Leia,"
The party entered the gloomy, ground-level hangar bay, and Sil'Gal led Leia, Han, and the twins to a turbolift. The turbolift doors shut, and the platform rose to the top levels of the temple. They stepped out into the grand audience chamber of the great temple. Skylights spilled sunlight on a broad, polished stone promenade that led to a raised stage. On a bier at the end of the room lay Luke, like a body prepared for burial. "Oh, Luke," Leia whispered. Using her own abilities with the Force, she tried to reach deep to brush against his spirit, but she felt only a cold hole and emptiness, as if Luke himself had been taken away. Not dead, she had always felt she would somehow know if her brother had died.
"Is he sleeping?" Jason said.
"Yes, in a way," Leia answered.
"When will he wake up?"
Jaina asked. "We don't know." Han, his arm around Leia, pulled her closer to him. Sil'Gal stared down at Luke.
"Master Skywalker told me I have an innate talent for healing with the Force. He had just begun to show me how to develop my skills, but I've tried all I know. Do you have any inkling about what really happened? Have you found any clues?"
Sil'Gal looked away, but Han answered with grim certainty. "It was Kip. Kip did this." Leia whirled to stare at him.
"What?"
"The last time I saw Luke, he told me he was afraid for Kip."
Han swallowed hard.
"He said that Kip had started dabbling in the dark side. The kid stole Mara Jade's ship and took off somewhere. I think Kip came back here and challenged Luke."
"But why?"
Sil'Gal nodded as if her head were too heavy for her.
"We did find the stolen ship in front of the temple. It is still here, so we don't know how he flew away again."
"But where would he get another ship?"
Suddenly, Leia remembered astonished New Republic astronomers reporting the impossible news that an entire group of stars in the Cauldron Nebula had gone supernova at the same time.
Could Kip have resurrected the Sun Crusher from the core of Yavin?
Han seemed afraid to accept what he knew was true. Leia sensed his emotions like a maelstrom within him.
"If Kip is on the loose with the Sun Crusher, then I'll have to go and stop him," he said.
It was a somber dinner with the Jedi trainees. Conversation was minimal, little more than forced pleasantries. They all feared to discuss what really preoccupied them, until Cam Solyusar said,
"We hoped you would bring us some news, Minister Organa Solo. Give us some guidance as to what we should do here. We are Jedi students with no master. We've learned a little, but not enough to continue training on our own,"
Tian broke in.
"I'm not sure we should try to learn things we don't understand. Look what happened to Gantoris. He was consumed by some evil thing he inadvertently found. And what about Kip Duran? What if we get lured to the dark side without knowing it?"
Old Streen stood up.
"He's here! Don't you hear the voices?"
When everyone turned to look at him, Streen sat down and hunched his shoulders as if trying to hide under the Jedi robe.
"I can hear him. He's whispering to me now. He talks to me always. I can't get away from him."
Leia felt a rush of hope.
"Luke? You can hear Luke talking to you?"
Streen whirled upon her.
"No! The Dark Man! A dark man, a shadow. He talked to Gantoris. He talked to Kip Duran. You shine the light, but the shadow always stays, whispering, talking."
Streen placed his hands against his ears. Kirana T knit her eyebrows.
"This is too dangerous. On Dathomir, I've seen what happens when a large group falls to the dark side." "We should all stop our Jedi exercises," Dorskitty One said, blinking his large yellow eyes. "This was a bad idea. We shouldn't have even tried."
Leia slapped her hands on the table.
"Stop this talk. Luke would be ashamed to hear his students saying such things. With attitudes like that, you'll never become Jedi Knights."
"Yes, there is a risk. There will always be risks. You've seen what happens to someone who isn't careful, but that simply means you must be careful. Don't be seduced by the dark side. Learn from the sacrifice that Gantoris made. Learn from how Kip Duran was tempted. Learn from the sacrifices your master made in an attempt to protect you all. Whatever you do, don't give up."
"She is right," Sil'Gal said.
"Do or do not," Kirana T said,
and Tian finished the phrase that Master Skywalker had drilled into them.
"There is no try."
Her heart pounding, Leia slowly sat down.
The twins stared at their mother in amazement, and Han gripped her hand in admiration. She breathed deeply, began to let herself relax, when suddenly an outcry of death shattered her soul. It sounded like an avalanche within the Force, an outcry of thousands upon thousands of lives wiped out in an instant. Around the table, the other Jedi candidates, all those sensitive to the Force, clutched at their chests or their ears. Streen let out a long wail.
It is too many, too many.
Leia's blood burned through her veins. Painful jolts ran through her body. Both of the Jedi twins were crying. Baffled, Han grabbed Leia's shoulders and shook her. What is it, Leia? What happened? He apparently had felt nothing. What? She gasped.
It was a great disturbance in the Force. Something terrible just happened.
With a cold wash of dread, Leia thought of young Kip Duran, turned to the dark side and now armed with the Sun Crusher.
Something terrible.
But she could not answer Han's other questions. The Force moved through all things, weaving the universe into an invisible tapestry that tied the smallest living creature to the largest star cluster. And when one of those threads was torn, ripples spread through the entire web, actions and reactions, great shock waves that affected all who could hear. The destruction of Caridia screamed through the Force, building power as it reflected off other sensitive minds. It rose to a tumult that struck. And woke. Sensory perceptions rushed back to Luke Skywalker like a storm, freeing him from the nothingness that had trapped and frozen him. His final shout still echoed in his ears, but now he felt strangely numb. The last thing he remembered was the serpent-shaped tendrils of black force wrapping around him, rising from the summons of Exar Kun and Luke's misguided student, Kip Duran. The serpents of Sith power had sunk their fangs into him. Luke had been unable to resist their combined might. Luke's head buzzed, and he felt giddy. He wondered why he should feel so insubstantial, until he looked down and saw his own body still lying motionless below him, eyes closed, face expressionless, his lightsaber at his hip. "What's going on?" Luke said out loud. "Hello?" Finally, Luke looked at himself, the part of himself that was aware, and saw an image like a ghost reflection of his body. Luke heard a whirring as the turbolift rose to the top chamber. The sound seemed eerie and unnatural, as if he were using senses other than his ears to hear. The turbolift doors slid open. R2-D2 rolled out, moving slowly along the polished stone promenade. The droid proceeded toward the raised platform. Luke's shimmering image stood in front of his body, where it lay in state, and he watched with joy as the little astromech droid came to him.
R2, am I glad to see you.
But R2 gave no indication that he heard Luke.
R2?
R2-D2 trundled up the ramp to Luke's shrouded body. The droid hooted, a low, mournful sound that expressed deep grief, if droids could feel such emotions. Luke attempted to move over to R2 to touch the polished barrel-shaped body. It took him a moment to figure out how to move his ghostly legs. His image skimmed across the floor with a dizzying fluidity. But when he stroked R2, his hand passed directly through. A quick idea came to him. Rather than using his illusory hands, he reached out with the Force to tap R2's shell, hoping to make a loud spang that would at least let the droid know something was amiss. He pushed and thumped with all his intangible might, and succeeded only in what he thought was a barely audible bump against the droid's metal casing. R2 paused, but while Luke gathered strength to make another Force assault, the droid dismissed the unexplained sound and entered the turbolift. Inside the turbolift, R2 turned his optical sensor once more toward the body of his master, made a slow, sliding whistle, and then the doors whisked closed. Luke stood in the echoing grand audience chamber all alone. He looked out through the temple skylights into the blackness of the jungle moon's deep night and wondered what he could do to save himself. Crammed into a transport seat far too small for his size and worst of all trapped next to 3PO for the duration of the journey, Chewbacca was just about out of patience.
They were on their way to rendezvous with an already assembled strike force consisting of one escort frigate and four Corellian corvettes. Enough firepower to occupy the secret Imperial think tank Maw installation and to overcome any resistance from the weapons scientists stranded there. Chewbacca wished that he could be with Han aboard the Millennium Falcon, but he had felt that his stronger duty was the rescue of the Wookiee prisoners left inside Maw installation. When he, Han, and young Kip Duran had been captured by Admiral Dalla, Chewbacca had been forced to work with the captive Wookiees. The thought of their ruined lives made his blood boil, as did the incessant monologue of his mechanical companion, who just kept rattling on.
"I simply don't understand why Mistress Leia ordered me to go with you. It would have been nice to see R2-D2 again at Master Luke's Jedi Academy. I haven't spoken to my counterpart in a long time. I really don't know what use I'm expected to be on this military mission. I suppose I could be of some use translating, but certainly there must be some other draw..."
Chewbacca hit the power switch on the back of 3PO's neck. The commandos seated with him on the troop transport broke out in applause. On the bridge of the escort frigate Yavaris, General Wedge Antilles looked across space. Sunlight reflected off the metal hulls of his fleet. The escort frigate held a crew of about 900 seasoned soldiers, while the rest of his fleet, four Corellian corvettes, carried 100 on each vessel. He had asked for command of this mission because he wanted to return to where Queezoox had spent so much of her life, to where the secrets of her memory, stolen by Kip Duran, might lie hidden. Han Solo had reported that Maw installation was no longer protected by Admiral Dalla's star destroyers. Her fleet had been lured out of the black hole cluster that protected the installation to wreak havoc across the galaxy. The precious weapons information and scientists inside the installation were undefended. Probably. Wedge was prepared for surprises, especially from a congregation of Imperial weapons designers. Only the beautiful Queezoox, with her pale blue skin and feathery hair, had finally realized that the work she had been doing was not just a scientific exercise of her intellectual powers, but a contribution to the destruction of the New Republic by the Empire. On the command bridge of the Yavaris, Wedge toggled on the intercom.
"Prepare to depart."
The four corvettes folded around the escort frigate in a diamond formation. Ahead, Wedge saw throbbing blue-white light as banks of heavy engines pulsed to life. The corvettes' huge engines were twice as large as the living compartments and the hammerhead-shaped control section. Princess Leia had been riding a corvette when Vader's Star Destroyer had captured her, demanding that she return the stolen Death Star plans so long ago. Wedge watched the light-embroidered night side of Coruscant veer away from the fleet as they angled up out of orbit, past metallic docking stations and heavy parabolic mirrors that directed magnified sunlight to warm the higher frozen latitudes. He wished Quee had stayed with him to watch the departure, but she was down in their quarters reviewing information tapes, studying. Since her memory would not come back of its own accord, Quee intended to fill the gaps with the missing information as quickly as possible. She also had a deep revulsion toward watching a planet from orbit. She had required much quiet encouragement before she finally told Wedge that the sight reminded her of her youth when she had been held hostage aboard an orbital training sphere under the harsh tutelage of Moff Tarkin. Quee had been forced to watch as Victory-class Star Destroyers obliterated the honeycomb settlements of her people whenever students failed their examinations. Thinking of the terrible things the Empire had done to Quee made Wedge clench his teeth. He turned to the bridge crew.
"Ready for hyperspace?"
"Course set, sir,"
the navigation officer answered.
Wedge vowed to do what he could to fill Quee's life with joy once they had conquered Maw installation.
"Move out," he said.
Back on Coruscant, Han was packing the Falcon. He'd said goodbye to Leia and the twins on Yavin 4, telling her,
"I've got to find Kip. Maybe I can stop him from blowing up more star systems and killing more people."
He had returned to Coruscant, seeking to confirm his suspicions about Kip's deadly course of action with the New Republic Council. And in fact, the Council had received the news that Kip had attacked Carida. As Han completed last-minute preparations in the hangar bay, he heard a voice behind him.
"Han, old buddy, need some help?"
He glanced over his shoulder to see Lando Calrissian striding toward him, ducking under the flat aerofoil of an X-wing starfighter.
Just leaving, Lando. Don't know how long I'll be gone. I heard, Lando said. Hey, why not let me come along? You'll need a co-pilot with Chewbacca gone on the Maw mission. Han hesitated. I'm doing this by myself. I can't ask anyone else to go with me. Han, you don't know what sort of hostile situations you're going to get into. Who'll be at the controls if you need to go up into the gunwale? Lando flashed his most winning smile. You've got to admit, I'm the obvious choice. Han sighed. Chewbacca would be my first choice. He doesn't try to gamble my ship away from me. We don't do that anymore, Han. We promised, remember? How could I forget? Anyway, what's your take on this, you old pirate? To be honest, I need to get to Kessel within a week. What's at Kessel? I didn't think you'd want to go back there soon after what happened last time. It was on the planet Kessel that Morrith Duel had forced Han and Chewbacca into the deep, dark mines to extract the intoxicating spice Glitterstim. And it was there that Han had met Kip. Lando beamed. Mara Jade's going to meet me there in a week. I've persuaded her to be my partner in a new spice mining operation. If you get me to Kessel, maybe I can find the Lady Luck again, and I can stop hitching rides with people. All right. But my priority is tracking Kip. As a disembodied spirit, Luke Skywalker could only watch as his Jedi trainees and his sister Leia filed into the Grand Audience Chamber.
Leia! Leia!
Leia flinched, but didn't seem to hear Luke's call. She reached toward his body and took hold of his arm, whispering,
I don't know if you can hear me, Luke, but I know you're not dead. I can sense you're still here. We'll find a way to help you. Leia!
Leia squeezed his hand and turned away quickly, blinking away tears. He watched as the other Jedi candidates followed her back to the turbo lift. Once again, he found himself all alone with his paralyzed body, staring at the echoing walls of the Masasi Temple.
Ben! Obi-Wan Kenobi, can you hear me?
Luke waited, but there was no response. Until he sensed coldness ripple through the air. Words trembled from the walls.
They can't hear you, Skywalker. But I can.
Luke spun around and saw a crack form in the stone walls. It grew darker as a tar-like silhouette oozed out and congealed into the shape of a cowled man, whose features were distinct now that Luke could see him in the spirit plane. The stranger had long black hair, shadowed skin, and the tattoo of a black sun emblazoned on his forehead. His eyes were like chips of obsidian, and his mouth bore a cruel scowl.
Luke recognized him. Exarchin.
Do you enjoy having your spirit trapped away from your body, Skywalker? I've had 4,000 years to get accustomed to it. The first century or two are the worst.
Luke glared at him. You corrupted my students, Exarchin. You caused the death of Gantoris. You turned Kip Duran against me.
My spirit was forced to wait until finally you brought your Jedi students here. Students who could hear my voice once they learned how to listen.
Fear echoed through Luke's mind, but he forced himself to sound calm and brave.
You can't harm my body, Keen. You can't touch anything physical.
Ah, but I know other ways to fight. And I have had endless millennia to practice. Rest assured, Skywalker, I will destroy you.
Keen sank like smoke through the cracks in the polished flagstones, descending to the heart of the great temple. Being chief administrator of Maw installation was a great enough burden under normal circumstances, but Tall Sivran had never counted on doing it without Imperial assistance. Standing inside the empty conference room, Sivran stroked his sensitive Twi'lek headtails and stared out the viewport into the empty space around the secret facility. He had never liked Admiral Dalla and her overbearing manner. In the years they had been stranded in the Maw, Sivran had never felt as though she understood his mission, to create new weapons of mass destruction for Grand Moff Tarkin. Now she had let a few rebel prisoners steal the Sun Crusher and kidnap one of Sivran's best weapons designers, Kwee-Zoox. Then Dala had abandoned her post to chase after the spies, leaving him alone and unprotected. During the last month, he had kept the Maw scientists working harder to come up with better prototypes and functional defenses, writing contingency plans and emergency procedures, outlining scenarios and prescribed responses to every situation. Being prepared is our best weapon, he thought. Tal Sivran stared with a thrill of pride at the huge spherical skeleton of the Death Star prototype, rising outside the viewport like a framework moon. As the Death Star orbited out of sight overhead, he turned to face his four top managers. Doxin was wider than he was tall, completely bald except for very dark, very narrow eyebrows like thin wires. He was in charge of high-energy concepts and implementations. Next to him sat Golanda, tall and hawkish, with a pointed chin, aquiline nose, and an angular face. She led the artillery innovations and tactical deployments section. Yem was a demonic-looking Deveronian who excelled in saying the right thing at the right time. He supervised documentation and legal counsel. Last of all, seated at the far corner of the table, was Wurman, a tall, one-armed brute whose skin had a purplish-green cast. Wurman was in charge of plant operations and keeping Maw installation up and running.
"Good morning, everyone,"
Tal Sivran said, seating himself at the head of the table and tapping his needle claws on the surface.
"I'd like you each to report on recent activities in your division."
Doxin gave a report of a new weapon his scientists had been testing.
"It's a metal crystal phase shifter," he said. "MCPS for short."
The weapon turned the structure of metal to powder. Suddenly, Yem stood up and cried out. Sivran frowned at him.
"It's not time for new business, Yem."
"But, Director..."
Yem gestured madly toward the viewport. A fleet of rebel warships had appeared inside the Maw. The invasion force Tal Sivran had dreaded for so long had finally arrived. With two Corellian corvettes at point and two at his flanks, General Wedge Antilles brought the escort frigate Yavaris toward the mismatched cluster of rocks that formed Maw installation.
"Maw installation," Wedge said into the comm channel. "This is General Antilles, commander of the New Republic occupation fleet. Please respond to discuss terms of your surrender."
He felt arrogant as he said it, but he knew they had no way of fighting off his fleet. Hidden in the midst of the black holes without Admiral Dalla's star destroyers to defend it, the installation depended on inaccessibility rather than firepower for protection. As his ships approached the cluster of rocks, Wedge received no response. But when the open metal framework of the Death Star prototype orbited up from behind the planetoids, he felt a stab of terror.
"Shields up!"
he said instinctively. But the Death Star did not fire, gracefully orbiting back out of view again. As Wedge brought his fleet in closer, a tracery of laser fire shot toward them from small buildings and habitation modules on the misshapen asteroids. Only a few of the beams managed to strike, reflecting harmlessly off the ship's shields.
"All right, two corvettes. Surgical strikes only. We want to remove those defenses, but don't damage the installation itself. That place holds too much important data to risk losing it."
Wedge watched the enormous banks of engines behind the two corvettes as they rained destructive blasts upon the asteroids. Bright red spears lanced down to pulverize the rocks.
"This is too easy," Wedge said.
A desperate signal came from one of the corvette captains. His image flickered as he beamed a transmission on the emergency channel.
"Something's happening to our hull. Shields aren't effective. Some new kind of weapon. Hull walls are weakening. Can't pinpoint where..."
The transmission cut off as the corvette became a ball of fire and shrapnel.
"Back off!"
Wedge shouted into the open channel, but the second corvette plunged forward. The captain of the second corvette blasted the nearest planetoid. Proton torpedoes sizzled with uncontained energy. Turbo laser blasts ignited volatile gases and flammables, reducing the small planetoid to incandescent dust.
"That won't be a problem anymore, sir,"
the captain of the second corvette said.
"You may deploy the strike forces at your leisure."
Howling warnings shrieked through the Maw installation's intercom so monotonously that Tal Sivran found it difficult to plan his emergency speech. Doxson sat by an interlaboratory communication station and cheered as he saw one of the rebel corvettes crumble into a cloud of pulverized metal plate and escaping fuel and coolant gases.
"It worked," Doxson said. "The MCPS worked. Unfortunately, we won't get a second shot, Director. The MCPS seems to have malfunctioned. But I do believe the original success against an actual target has proven the system worthy of additional development."
The second rebel corvette came in with all weapons blazing, and the asteroid housing the offices and labs of the High Energy Concepts was incinerated under the barrage. An explosion reverberated through the facility, and the computer monitors inside the conference room went blank. A stormtrooper captain rushed into the room.
"We have just successfully destroyed the main computer core, sir."
"You did what? Is that in emergency procedures?"
Tal Severin said. He picked up his hard copy of the emergency procedures manual.
"Captain, which page did you find that on?"
"Sir, we cannot allow our vital data to fall into rebel hands. The computer backups must be destroyed before the invaders take possession of this facility."
"I'm not sure we addressed that contingency when we wrote the manual," Galanda said,
flipping pages in the document. Worman shuffled through papers with his one meaty hand.
"Director, I see here in section 5.4, in the event of rebel invasion, paragraph C, if such an invasion appears likely to succeed in gaining possession of the installation, I am to lead my team in a mission to the power reactor asteroid and destroy the cooling towers so that the system will go supercritical and wipe out both this base and the invaders as well."
"Good, good,"
Tal Severin said, finding the right page and verifying the words for himself.
"Get to it. We'll fall back and evacuate to the Death Star prototype. We can swing by and pick you up, then make our escape. We'll abandon the rebels to their deaths and take our precious knowledge back to the Empire."